This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
She is a young person. Do you know how disgusting that is? And that cornball nigga who loves to make himself look like he's the white people's savior.
Who said that?
Emmanuel Acko. Come talk to me, white people. I'm the black guy that's nice.
Man, I know these people, man. I'm gonna have to have.
Well, you're not saying it, I am.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life. Grinding all my life.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Club Shay Shay. I am your host, Shannon Sharp. I'm also the proprietor of Club Shay Shay. The lady that's stopping by for conversation and a drink today is a multi-talented, prolific comedian, actress, writer, producer, director, TV host, syndicated radio host, author, podcaster, DJ, rapper, singer, poet, media personality, performer. Cultural commentator, content creator, an industry veteran, social media star, NAACP Image Award nominee, hip-hop scholar, entrepreneur, CEO, a philanthropist, an activist, a renaissance woman. She calls herself a common sense specialist, the people's favorite truth teller or truth translator, as she prefers to call herself. She says what folks are actually thinking. Welcome to the show, Miss Amanda Seals.
You ran it down.
How was that? I mean, so how was the intro? Did I leave out anything?
That was the best intro I've ever had in my life.
You like that?
That was fabulous.
Because you was a little worried. I mean, when you came in, you was like,
"Baby, what? I wasn't worried."
You was like,
"No, you don't know."
You're so formal. Why are you
being
so
worried? That's me trying to welcome you. That's not me saying. That's not
how you welcome me in my own house.
No, because I know that I have a lot of energy when I come into a space, and people will be like, "Oh, you know, it's a lot of." So I have been trained over the years to try to make people feel comfortable.
Okay.
So that's what I'd be trying to do.
I'm trying to make you feel comfortable. Are you comfortable?
Yes.
You know, normally when guests come on the show, we like to have a toast. So it's bad luck to toast a spirit in water.
Okay.
So
a toast.
All the best. Thanks for stopping by. But I had to jump on this right quick.
Go ahead with it.
Real good, folks. Go ahead and get your bottle of this Shea Butter Portier. So, how are you?
How am I? I am. That's a loaded question. I'm evolving. That's how I am. I'm evolving. I've had a lot of information and a lot of slander at the same time.
Okay.
And in the past month, it's just been a very difficult time, but there's been really beautiful things that have come out of it that I will speak to, you know, in this conversation.
Well, since we started there, we'll start there and we can pick up, go to another direction a little later. What started this evolution? What caused Amanda to all of a sudden see things or not see things differently, but maybe see things as they actually are?
Because so many people were seeing what I was experiencing and they shared with me that they had had similar experiences.
Okay.
And so I recently was diagnosed as someone who has autism spectrum disorder,
okay,
which is very difficult to identify in Black women because of racism.
So what exactly is autism spectrum? Because I hear people say you're on the spectrum.
It used to be called Asperger's.
Okay.
But that is no longer what it's called, because to my knowledge, Asperger was a Nazi.
Okay.
But what it typically, what it simply means is that your brain functions in a different way. So you're neurodivergent, and you also have certain tendencies that are considered outside of what the neurotypical way of things is.
Okay.
And a lot of times that can have you present in a manner that people misrepresent.
Okay. Okay.
Which is the story of my life.
Okay.
And so when all of this started ballooning out of nowhere and people were saying, you know, you're unlikable and you're a bully. No, not you're a bully, but you're being bullied. And these were things, these were tropes that have been associated with me before, but I'm in a new level of visibility
at this
juncture. Mm-hmm. And you get people saying things like, you are difficult, you are mean, you are nasty, and you know that you're none of these things.
Right.
But they're attributing it to things that are not actually action-based. Like, I don't cheat people. I don't lie to people. I don't stab people in the back. I don't operate in mendacity. I am not duplicitous. I don't do none of this shit. But I have a certain tone about how I speak. And that makes people feel like, oh, I'm mean, because something about the tone that I speak in doesn't make them feel a certain way. So
can I ask you this? Not to cut you off, but were they people that you had a relationship with? Were this in the workplace that you became difficult? Or are this people that you just have general interactions with?
These aren't people I've met.
So
it's the people who are saying these things about me have never met me.
And that's impacting you?
Yes.
Why?
For a number of reasons. One, I am not a sociopath. Two, it is actually a part of being autistic that you are very, very, very sensitive to what people think about you, because you are always keenly aware that you are an alien. You are keenly aware that you are different. You are keenly aware that something is very odd about you, and you're always, always trying to make the room feel good. We literally just talked about it, because it's my habit.
Right.
It's my habit to try. I'm gonna cry already. I've only been here for like five damn minutes. It is my habit because I've always been labeled as this. You think you know everything. It's not that I think I know everything, but I really did know the answer. And I'm thinking I'm helping the room out by having the answer.
Oh.
But they like,
I think you're a know-it-all.
You're a lot. You're a show off. You're extra. In my sophomore year of college, I was put in a suite with seven other women. And the day I got there, my name had been ripped off the door and thrown on the ground. I didn't even know these women. And 2 weeks in of them not talking to me, I said, listen, I'd like to have a Friday night where I buy a bottle of tequila and we all just sit around and y'all can take shots and tell me why you don't like me. And everybody's reason was, I don't like you because you think you all laugh. I don't like you because you extra. I don't like you because you a show off. None of that shit is anything having, like, I'm not harming them.
Right.
Like, I'm literally just trying to
exist. But they formed this opinion of you prior to meeting you.
Like, I'm just trying to exist. I'm literally just existing in the world. And it's a fucking problem. And so when you are also, I'm also an only child, you know, like, okay. So I didn't have like built in support systems outside of my mom. You know, I didn't have like that brother sister support system. And so I've always felt like the outsider. I've always been an outlier. You know, it's always interesting when people call me the mean girl. I say, I must have turned into a bad bitch because I was flat chested and loud for a really long time. Like, I was always the bullied one.
Right.
I've been bullied for all type of shit. But when you ask, like, why does that bother you? It's because no one wants to be invalidated. I don't think anyone is really okay with that. And I think that also as a Black woman, we are always kind of put in this position of appeasement. And how do you not disrupt the space? How do you not disrupt the space? And if you're going to not like me, I would at least like it to be for a legit reason.
Okay.
And I'm so happy to be in this space with you because, to be honest, like, I've spent so much time trying to convince people, Shannon, trying to convince people of like, no, no, that's not what it is. That's not what it is. And it's like, I'm off it.
Yeah.
I'm off it. There is the truth. There is my truth. And a lot of times, baby, it's the same. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why you can see that is because when I recount a story, I want you to notice this when I recount stories. I very rarely include my feelings. It's never, I felt that this person did this. I thought that this person did this. It's like reading Game of Thrones. He's just giving you the sequence of events. You don't see the feelings of Catelyn Stark at the fucking Red Wedding until you watch the show, because in the writing, it is just a series of events. That is part of my autism. I speak in directs. I speak in linear spaces. I speak in literals. That's part of the reason why people don't like me neither, because I'm literal and I take things literally. So if you say to me, I'm gonna be there at 5, I'm like, why you ain't here at 5? They're like, well, I'm at 5-ish. Well, you should have said 5-ish because I was waiting for you at 5.
So let me ask you this. How old were you when you got diagnosed, and did you always feel that you was different and you felt something was wrong?
Well, what's today?
Today is Thursday, the 18th.
So 42 and however many days until I was just recently diagnosed.
Okay.
And this came out of this situation because so many Black women who are autistic said to me, I see you. You need to. And I've always thought you can look at other interviews. I have mentioned before, like, I think I'm on the spectrum because I'm an 80s baby. This was not really a part of the narrative.
Right.
And as we started seeing more about autism and you start seeing shows about different characters and I start learning more like from people like Holly Robinson Peake, I'm like, this feels really like me. But then, you know, I think sometimes we're afraid to learn certain things.
Yeah.
So
60s and 70s babies just got whipped and put to bed.
And to be honest, it's true. And to be honest, I just want to say, like, so my mom, so in this revelation, my mother started looking up like symptoms of autistic children and was like, oh, you exhibited all of this, but I didn't know what to do with this. Mm-hmm. She's a single parent. She's trying to figure it out. But I really just thank my mom, because what my mom couldn't show up for me emotionally, I realized that she was able to, at the very least, that's not even fair to say, she was able to still let me be who I am instead of beating it out of me.
Right.
Which happens to so many kids who are misunderstood, you know, like, and she's West Indian. La Japal Gridita Massive. And so, like, I'm over here being this precocious, you know, loquacious child that's always talking to me. They're telling her, like, why are you letting her just do all this talking and all of that? Why is she's too fresh? Why are you doing all, why are you letting her just run Shimotsu? And my mom is like, that's Amanda. Like, let her live.
Right.
And most, let's be real, most parents.
That what happened.
No. Shut it up. Mm-hmm. If my father had lived with me, I would never have been the person I am now. Because he wouldn't have been able to handle it. And I believe that he is autistic too. He's a brilliant. No, because he's brilliant.
Right.
He was never seen the way he needed to be seen. And so it turned into narcissism.
But you can be brilliant without being autistic though, right?
Hell yeah. Okay. 1,000%. Okay. Absolutely.
But just
because I'm both. But I'm gifted and autistic.
Yes, but Amanda, sometimes, you know, just because you have a special gift, that doesn't mean that, you know, you have a spectrum or you have a just because you see things differently, it doesn't mean that you're on the spectrum or you.
This isn't related to simply how I see things. This is related to how my brain functions.
Yes. But just because your brain functions differently from, say, mine.
Yes.
So you feel just because your brain functions differently that that's what caused it, or there's a clinical diagnosis that
there are clinical diagnoses
for you.
Yes, there are clinical diagnoses for autism. Yes.
Yeah, well, I know
when
that.
When you take the tests, you see, when you take the tests, you're like, hold up, I've been thinking my whole life that this was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that I have to doodle, I have to draw all the time. I have to be doing things all the time to be stimulated. It's literally called stimming.
Okay.
Like the fact that when I'm a baby, I have to rock, like in a child pose, like literally rock. And my mom would be like, "What? Why is she doing that?" We find out later, this is stimming. This is her literally dealing with her anxiety in a self-soothing way.
Okay.
The fact that even little things, like if there was a bowl of peanuts right here, I would be lining them up in a row. I'd be lining them up in a row. Like this, these are small things that are indicative of like your brain functions in a very particular way.
Right. Okay.
And that functionality also displays itself in your behavior. Right. So it's also atypical to the way that our society functions.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, like this society is very keen on, people performing. There's all this phoniness mm-hmm. all the time.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And when you are autistic, you literally are unable to even catch these certain social cues. There have been twice in my life where I was in a fight and I didn't know I was about to be in a fight because I just didn't understand the social cues.
Right.
I literally didn't understand what was happening.
Okay.
You know, I'm thinking like they said, come outside. And I'm like, what's up? And then I get punched in the fucking face. For the record, I won the fight.
You let her get out. She got out first and you still won.
Yes, sir.
Damn, you got squabble skills like that?
I have rage. I have rage. I'm very strong, like freakishly.
You single?
Yes.
Mm.
You want to talk about it?
Nah. And we're gonna talk about it later. So let me ask you this. So there were a lot of parent-teacher conferences with you, huh?
Yes, but not for what do you think they were about?
Your excessive talking, maybe the doodling.
Funnily enough, no. You know what the parent-teacher conferences were about?
What?
Amanda is sticking up for other kids in the class. Amanda is correcting me. Like, I had a teacher, Ms. Schwenk, who called a conference because she was talking about Aboriginal art.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she stood in front of the class and said, you know, that the Aborigines are a Stone Age people. And I was like, ma'am, there are Aboriginals
yeah.
alive right now. Like they are a part of civilization. Like, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, no, you know, what I mean is that they've never advanced. And we in a classroom in Orlando, Florida. So like, if we don't check this type of stuff,
right.
It's going to just continue. So I was that student. Like I was the kid who was always raising my hand and, just wasn't easily appeased by simply just someone being an authority.
Right.
And I love this because when she called my mom and said, you know, I'd like to set a conference up because I have some complaints about Amanda. My mom said, well, you know, that's interesting because Amanda has some complaints about you. And so they came to the meeting. It was my mom and Mr. Wright and Miss Cersei, is all black people at Dr. Phillips High School in Orlando, Florida. And this lady sat there and actually you and Mr. Wright had the same build. And Mr. Wright was like, all right. So, you know, are we here to discuss Amanda disrupting the class with her talking? And she was like, no, Amanda doesn't disrupt the class with her talking. She actually helps the other students out. He's like, oh, okay. So is it about her grades? And she's like, actually, no. One of her art pieces is featured in our exhibit at the library. And he's like, so what are we here for? And she's like, well, you know, she corrects me in front of the class. And these three black people are like, here we go with this racist bullshit, you know, because that's really what it is. We're in Florida in the 80s and the 90s. And
but let me ask you this.
OK.
Do you think she would have felt equally as offended if a white kid, because I'm assuming this teacher was white, right?
Mm-hmm.
If a white child would have corrected her, I think most teachers would feel some type of way if a child corrects them.
That's not for me to surmise. I'm just saying that my experience was this lady giving wrong information.
Yeah.
And I'm allowed to correct her. Now, this is the same lady who tried to accuse me of stealing. And when a white girl said, no, Amanda didn't steal it, I did. She was like, well, I think both of you need to go to the principal.
Right.
I am in Orlando, Florida, which is a notoriously racist state, Florida, in the 90s. And I'm talking to you about a white woman who is speaking about black people, indigenous people in a country where those same indigenous people have had all of their land taken from them by former criminals that were sent there from England. And she is calling them Stone Age people. And I, as a black girl, the only black girl in her class, am correcting her.
But my thing is, you're right. She possibly misspoke or she didn't know.
I guess my question to you is, why do you even feel compelled at this juncture in this interview? Why would you even feel compelled to try to
Because I'm not defending. But my thing is that what I'm trying to say, most adults, when kids correct them or speak, feel some type of way. This is not unique to a black, white, or white black. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm sorry that you took it that way. But I remember when I was growing up, my grandparents and parents said, hey, kids, stay in your place. Adults are speaking. That's all. Maybe that didn't happen where you were from in Orlando, Florida. But where I grew up when I grew up, kids did not correct adults. So I apologize if you thought it came off as combative.
No problem.
Let's get into your acting. You've been at this game for a long time. You started in 1993 as a child actor. Was that something that you always wanted to do?
Not that I always wanted to do. I mean, I started dance very, very young. In 1989, I was on Disney. Okay. In 1989, I went to an audition for Disney.
Okay.
Because they had something called the Sparkling Christmas Spectacular at Disney World in Orlando. And my mom was like, I think you should go and audition. So I went and auditioned. And I made it, which I was not expecting to do. It was like 1,500 kids dancing and I made it. And I'm like, okay. And even though you're going to probably have an issue with this, they were racist. So when I was at Disney,
yes,
and I was in the situation at Disney, I was there as the only black girl.
Okay.
And there was a whole crew. It's like 12 of us. And so I was called an N-word right there while I was there. And I was also bullied while I was there because I was told that you're only here because you're black. You can't really dance. You're just here because you're black. So don't get any ideas. So that's what I'm being told by the other children. Does that suffice as racist to you, or would you want to call it something else? Is that just kids being mean?
The kids. So let me ask you a question. As a child, you never said anything derogatory? You was just this model citizen as a child? I mean, children. Now, we're talking children, not functioning adults. Now, if you told me the adults, parents were telling you this, or the execs or people that are in charge of Disney are telling you this, I could agree with it. But at 89, you're probably 8-9 years of age. Maybe younger.
So you have no problem with the children that were cursing out Ruby Bridges and the Little Rock Nine? Do you think that was just them being kids?
Two things can be true. Kids can be kids and not function as an adult, and things can be wrong. And sometimes when kids say things, they're repeating what they heard their parents say. They don't know it's wrong.
So what about the children who are receiving it that know it's wrong? Does that not matter?
Yes.
If I'm 10 and I'm receiving that treatment and I know it's wrong, does it make my experience of it less?
It doesn't make it any less valid. No.
So that's what we're here to talk about. My experience.
Yes.
And so my experience is that I experienced that and it was difficult. So that's the valid part of this. I'm not here to protect those people because it's irrelevant to the conversation. So when I'm talking about me being on this dance show, I was there and it was, there was other kids there who were actually really kind and they had been in like the business. And so for instance, shout out to Melissa Salamone, her grandmother, they were not rich, and a lot of other kids were really rich. And so they got pushed to the side because they wasn't rich. So her grandma and my mom, like really, like they kind of found each other. And that's where I learned about headshots and resumes and agents, etc. And I was able to get an agent from that.
Okay.
So then I start auditioning and, I'm like booking stuff. And it's like, oh, all this precociousness is actually being put to good use. And then I booked, like, my first big job was Cop and a Half.
Okay.
I was Katie. I remember being at my fifth grade trip to Wakaiva Riverwalk and my mom pulling up and was like, we got to go to this audition. I'm like, come on, we're about to go on a nature hike. And she's just like, no, we have to go. I really think we should go. So I'm just like, ugh. So I was never like the child actor, like the typical child actor. Like, and my mom was never like, she was never a momager.
Right.
She was more so just like, you know, it's like if you don't want to practice piano, but your parents know that practicing piano is good for you. Like, that's really what it was. It was like, you don't want to go, but I know this is good for you. And I'm the parent. So we going to go.
So you said you weren't like a normal. So you did normal things like a normal child. You didn't have like, you didn't get homeschooled because you was on this show and you did this. You were shooting three or four times, you know, four or five times a week.
No.
You had a normal life as a child.
Yeah. And my mom was very about that. So, like, on My Brother and Me, when I was on My Brother and Me on Nickelodeon,
right.
I was only supposed to be on two episodes, but they really liked my work. And so they said, okay, we're going to write her into the whole show. So my mom was like, well, what does that mean? And they were like, well, that means we're going to do 15 episodes. No, it was 12 episodes.
Okay.
But I'm only in 10 because my mom was like, well, she has a trip with her aunt.
So how did you feel about that?
Fine. Because I was never about... Like, this was a hobby. It was a hobby for me at that age.
Okay.
I was a gymnast. That was what I was more interested in. I'm like, I got
to
make...
Well, Bella Caroli wasn't coming to your school to get you to sign you out of school, Amanda.
No, but my coach was picking me up from school to take me to the gym. I went to Orlando Metro. Shout out to Jeff and Christy. Yeah. I mean, I was a gymnast, for real, for real.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not sure I don't understand.
No, but I'm saying, like, Nickelodeon, this is a paying job, I'm assuming.
Doesn't matter. I'm a child. Remember how children have... You know, different things,
yes.
About how we understand things. So it didn't matter to me. I cared about gymnastics.
Okay.
So literally, like, when I was going into the audition for Nickelodeon, you had to do this long walk from the parking lot to the audition. And I just remember crying that whole walk because I was mad because the coach had said that day that I could work out with the level eights. And my mom said, no, we got to go to this audition. And I was just like, I want to work out with the level eights. But I booked the show.
So at the time the Nickelodeon was going on, I said Britney Spears, Amanda Bynes, Emma Roberts. Did you meet any of these?
Mm-mm. No.
Did you know any other child actors?
Well, the ones that were on the show with me, but I wasn't. I mean, I was very insular. Remember, I wasn't out here either. This was in Orlando.
Okay.
So, like, we shot on the same soundstage as all that for a little bit, but we never met any of them. Like, literally, it was just, like, in passing. Then they left, and Gullah Gullah Island took over. But you're very insulated.
Right.
I mean, you're not really, like... I mean, also, like, it's not like I'm the star of the show,
right.
You know? So I'm not going to... I don't even think they had, like, Nickelodeon Kids Choice Awards or things at that time, but... we only did one season.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
okay,
they played the season for 7 years.
Right.
You know, but it wasn't like, and again, like, I didn't have a momager. I didn't have like a publicist.
Right.
And, you know, there's like a lot of kids in those situations, their parents are seeing them
as the meal ticket.
Yes, you the meal ticket.
Whereas your mom never viewed you as that.
My mom is dropping me off at work so she can go to work.
Okay.
You know, so I'd be on set, you know, by myself, but I was just super duper 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 fortunate that, you know, we were taken care of, we were protected. You know, when you see this documentary Quiet on the Set, you just feel so sad is such a not accurate word, but you just feel so bad that these children were not protected and they should have been protected by the adults that were around them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was protected. And the creators of the show, Calvin Brown Jr. and Ilunga Adel, like, they were really not playing around with the blackness. Like, everybody was black on this damn show. And that was essentially why the show actually did not go forward, because they wanted them to coon it up. And, you know, there was this kind of trend. Remember with JJ and they wanted them to go that route. And they was like, nah, we're not doing that. Like, this is about a black family. Like, let them just be a black family.
Right.
And so for me, it was very, it was a dope experience. But I'm very proud, though, that at one point they had called parent conferences with the director.
What did you do?
And so, no, with everybody, they were like, the kids is acting up, so we're going to have parent conferences. And so everybody's looking at their moms like, you know, what's going to happen? And I just, you know, I was like, I don't know what this is about. And I'm very proud that I was sitting outside and my mom was in and out. And I was like, why was it so short? She said, because when I went in there, the man said, Amanda's great. So this whole Amanda's difficult to work with narrative is fascinating to me. It's fascinating, truly.
So as you said, you only did this for a year. You were big into gymnastics. You really liked gymnastics. And like child acting was kind of like a hobby. But do you look back on it at, or if you ever have, did you like ever want your own show when you were a child? Or did you look back on it and say, man, maybe I could have.
Never. I never wanted my own show. I had a really fulfilling life.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm in gymnastics. I'm doing the child acting. I'm also, you know, I'm thriving in academics. You know, my mom's got me in like extracurricular programs. I get to travel with my aunt and, you know, just do other. She married a white man, so we started doing white people activities. So now I'm doing scuba diving and skiing and shit. I'm in Colorado. You know, I'm just getting a whole other experience. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, and I just want to also just bring this to light for you because this is going to be a theme throughout this interview.
Okay.
I am a scholar of race.
Okay.
I'm not just someone who experiences it.
Right.
I'm a scholar. I'm an academic of race. So I see the world through a particular lens because I am skilled at doing so and because
right.
I'm an expert at doing so. Like my master's isn't just in African-American studies. It's the fact that I was taught by some of the greatest thought leaders of our time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear me say these things, I would just like to ask that because you have someone who is an expert sitting in front mm-hmm. of you, to just consider versus be combative, because there may be an opportunity here to see something differently because you have someone with you who is not just experiencing race, but is also examining. And there's a different intellectualism about that. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
different intellectualism about that. And I say that also because that's why I went and got my master's.
Okay.
I went and got my master's because I know that we live in a world that loves to try and find ways to undermine Black people's minds. They love to find ways to undermine Black people's intellect. Look at this DEI bullshit. This DEI bullshit is trying to state that in order to include Black people, we have to lower the standard, which is unconscionable. Because if Black people with no schooling were able to build the White House, if Black people with no schooling were able to create all of these beautiful spirituals that we still sing to this day, if Black people with no schooling were able to till these fields and know the ways of agriculture enough to create the actual breadbasket of this nation, then you telling me that their descendants are not smart enough to get into Harvard without you lowering a standard? That's
right.
Because DEI and affirmative action is not about lowering the standards, about expanding the opportunity. So I went and got my master's so that when I am in spaces and I do bring up race and I talk about these things, it's not just based on experience. It's based on actual study.
Okay. I'll also ask that because if I don't see things exactly as you see
you
them,
I don't expect you to.
Don't take it as being combative. You see things one way, I might see it a different way. That doesn't mean I'm being combative.
I would say it's combative when there's a undermining of how someone sees something.
But why are you trying to undermine how I see it?
Because it's my experience.
Okay, well, I'm telling you,
I don't know my experience.
But I'm saying, see, you take it as if I don't agree with you, I'm being combative.
No, I don't. I take it as if I have an experience and you're telling me that my experience isn't what it is.
No,
you're telling me that my thinking somebody is racist, who I was in a classroom with for a year, that you have never met, you are emitting doubt upon that because of your own experience.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. eBay Motors is here for the ride. You know what I remember about my first car? Is at the moment I got it, I wanted to improve it. Because like most 16-year-old kids, you don't exactly get a luxury automobile. So you look at it, you go, well, I need to add some speakers. I need to tint out the windows. I need to make this thing the coolest car possible so I can cruise around town with all my buddies, waving at the babes, and enjoy myself. So my favorite part of car culture when I was young was definitely the subwoofers in the back of the car. And we built the boxes from scratch, had multiple 12-inch subs, and you could hear me coming from a long, long way away. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
No, I was talking about the teacher and you.
Right.
And I said,
in your experience,
I believe based on my
experience,
and a lot of people, is that kids, correct an adult,
right,
no matter what society is frowned upon. That's what I was saying.
Okay.
You took it to that. I'm trying to minimize your experience and say, well, I'm defending her when I wasn't.
Okay. I think there's something worth saying that could come off that way, and it should be something to consider.
Well, see, again, you're going to consider it your way because you see things, like you said, you see things through your prism. Okay.
I think it's fascinating to watch you accuse me of doing the thing that you're doing.
No,
it's fascinating.
This is your interview, so I won't interject what I think. But anyway, your mom is white.
My mother is not white.
Is your
Why
mom?
Why do people keep saying my mother is white?
She's West Indian, so.
She is a black woman from Grenada, which is a black island.
She married a white man.
No, she did not.
You say you started doing white things?
My aunt married a white man. That's what I said. I said my aunt married a white man.
Oh,
I trips with my aunt.
My mother is a black woman. I misunderstood.
Well, listen, I get attacked for this. And people try to undermine the validity of my voice and my access to blackness on a regular basis by trying to make up this thing that my mother is a white woman.
Okay.
My mother is a black woman from Grenada. Grenada is so black that Maurice Bishop said in a speech that the FBI was worried about Grenada more than they were about Cuba, because if Grenada really did become communist, they could influence black Americans because we are black and speak English.
Okay.
That's how black Grenada is.
Well, that's on me.
And my father is black from Roxbury, Boston.
That's on me because I when I heard married, I didn't hear the part that you said it was your aunt that married. So okay, we good there now. We good. So what made you receded from the spotlight after you did My Brother and Me?
Well, I didn't recede. I just was a kid.
Right.
I mean, I just was.
Other things interesting.
I didn't even think I was in the spotlight when I did My Brother and Me. I mean, you have to understand, it was really like, first of all, it was 5 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
The Universal was 5 minutes from my house.
Right.
So I literally would just drive over. It was across the street from my high school.
So you really could have walked.
Yeah, like I could. I mean, it was. So it wasn't as. I mean, the other kids on there that were from LA, I mean, they had to travel from LA. Like, so there's a much bigger experience attached to it for them. Whereas I'm just like going down the block to do a TV show for a few months.
But that was a pretty big deal, Amanda. I mean, the kids treat you differently knowing that you were like, okay, that's a pretty big deal. Look at Amanda.
Yes, but I think I didn't make it a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of how I've always operated. Like, if I, like, it's like, I don't think, like, even when people tell me I'm a celebrity, I'm just like, I don't consider myself a celebrity. Like, I don't move that way. Like, people see me by myself and be like, you by yourself? And it's like, that's just kind of, like, I just don't do the hullabaloo.
Right.
But, no, so I just, I mean, I did the show. I went back to eighth grade.
Right.
And, you know, there wasn't, like, it's not like Orlando was, like, a big industry.
Right.
So after that, I went to eighth grade, and then I really got into gymnastics, and I just really, that was my passion. I mean, to this day, I'm obsessed with gymnastics. I mean, people know that. I love me some gymnastics. We just saw our first gymnast from an HBCU win the Nationals, which I just think is incredible, and shout out to Fisk. And I just went, it wasn't that I receded from the spotlight. It was more so that I just went on with
you graduated.
My life. Yeah, I just went on with my life, you know? And then I went to Performing Arts High School.
Okay.
Dr. Phillips is one of the greatest high schools of all time, so we were clear. I mean, our alumni are like Wayne Brady and Joey Fatone and Luis Fonsi and Eddie Wong. I mean, we've got, you know, my homeboy Michael Scott, who is the genie in Aladdin on Broadway. Like, we just have a really beautiful legacy. And so that's where I went to high school. And so I was really shaped, I would say, by my gymnastics coach, my teacher and like the head of the director of the theater program in high school, Karen Ruggiero, and my mother. Like, these three people really shaped me. And these were people that yelled a lot. Like, you are being yelled at. You are expected to be perfect. I had to exhibit a high level of professionalism from like a very young age, which is also why when people say a man is difficult to work with, I just laugh. Cause like, I've always been, I mean, I've been paying taxes since I was eight. I've been in this business for so long. And then even when I was in spaces that weren't professional spaces, you were expected to carry yourself. I mean, you've played high level sports.
Mm-hmm.
So you're expected to be obedient. You know, you're expected to show up ready to work.
Yeah.
You know, you're expected to be self-motivated. You know, it's not enough for your coach to cheer you on.
No.
You better be able to do it whether they're there
the
or not.
The best ones are self-motivated.
Yes. So that is gymnastics and that was theater. And theater at my school was like football at FSU. I mean, it's top notch.
Mm-hmm.
And at UF. And so like, that's what I come from. I come from people expecting you to be at your best when they're not looking. That's where I come from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I have always operated. But you know, you go through life and you realize that's not how everybody operate.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest mistake that we make, because we want to see and others as we see ourselves. I show up on time. Why can't you show up on time? I did this assignment. Why can't you do this assignment? I did this. Why can't you do that?
It takes time to get grace. It takes time to learn grace. It takes time to understand the beauty in difference versus the frustration.
Mm-hmm.
We also don't live in a tolerant society.
No.
Like, we're very much taught individualism and this idea that what I say goes, which you keep accusing me of, which is not true. But there's really something so great that you learn in maturity, which is how to identify people who have like differences from you and people who are harmful to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, that's the dance, I think, for a lot of us. But I really just thank those people because they gave me discipline and they gave me my own discipline. Like, I didn't have to be disciplined by them. You know what I'm saying? Like, they taught me regimen. They taught me discipline. And when you are somebody who is an independent thinker, when you're somebody who's an outlier, who goes against the grain, you better have motherfucking discipline.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be by yourself a lot.
But you said, you say this society teaches you individualism. But I thought you were supposed to be an individual, stand out while being able to blend in. Am I wrong?
So, you know, colonial society teaches individualism over community. It's basically, when I say individualism in this context, I'm referring to like the quest for self.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as I'm winning, it don't matter about anybody else.
Right.
That idea.
Okay. Okay.
You know?
Okay.
It's like people who will say like racism doesn't exist because I succeeded. And like, there's so many factors that had to come into play for me to succeed. Right. So I come from a middle class home. I was very fortunate to be very smart. I'm light skinned. I was well behaved. I had really, really, really good educators that cared about me, right? I could have been born 10 miles away and had educators that saw me as a nuisance, right? And then they put me in fucking disciplinary classes, et cetera, right? I was somebody who was very able to very quickly pick up on, like, oh, I can't get in trouble. I can't have a low credit score. Like, I have to be perfect, 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 perfect. So, like, in order for me to succeed, I had to be, and we all know this. I mean, we listen to Papa Pope on Scandal. You have to be 10 steps perfect than everybody else. So, you know, irregardless of the racism, it's indicative of the fact that, you know, you've had to be so flawless to get there.
Right.
And it shouldn't be that way. So the individualism is more so this idea that, if one person makes it, then it's an indicator that the system or the institution doesn't exist.
But if you know, I tell people this, you can be good at any game if you understand the rules. If you know that you have to be 10 steps better, isn't it easier because you know this going in without having to find it out ex post facto, like after the fact? So you knew that Amanda has to be 10 times better than her counterpart. So you prepared yourself to be 10 times better, to be more prepared, to be more disciplined, to be more dedicated, to be more informed.
I don't know if I would say it's easier, though. I mean, I think easier. I don't know that that's the word I would use. I mean, I think it's, I mean, I guess there's something to be said for, like, when you have a guide.
Right.
There's, you know, you're giving a bit more to the game, but I don't know.
I think it's easier to take a test if it's an open book test than
1,000%. But if you still don't know where to find it in the book,
right,
you still ass out.
Right.
Because you never read the book in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I think the other thing was having people around me that knew how to find it in the book of me. That knew, like, if it says that I got to be that much smarter, I still have to learn how to access my intellect.
Right.
If it says I need to be more regimented, more regimented, more disciplined, I still have to know the tools on how to do that. Mm-hmm. It's like when you have to learn, like, you know, like when you'd have to take, like, notes taking. Right. You're like, I gotta take a class on how to take notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you don't know how to take the notes,
exactly,
then you're wasting your time.
Right. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use code Shannon. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's the code Shannon. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You go to college. Why did you go so far away?
I was always a New Yorker. I just feel like that was my tribe. Like, I feel like I was born in a different place than I felt comfortable. When I got to New York, when I went to New York for the first time when I was 12, I was like,
huh, I've been here my whole life.
Yes, my people. And also there was a cultural difference in New York.
Yeah.
So my directness that I had always been vilified for, that people would tell me from a young age, like, you're rude, you're mean, just because I'm direct. Mm-hmm. In New York, that was the culture.
Yeah.
So I just felt
for sure
also a certain level of acceptance immediately, because I'm hearing people talk how I talk and they're not being vilified for it. They're not being put in a corner for it.
You fit in, huh?
You fit in.
But no, you fit in.
No, that's what I'm saying. I fit in because I felt normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not felt normal.
Mm-hmm.
And as a child, not feeling normal feels terrible.
Right.
And even with hip hop, like, my fascination, I feel like, with hip hop was that I'm hearing people spit and talk in a way that I exist. Like when you hear interviews with MC Light and Queen Latifah, they talking like this. You know what I'm saying? This is how New Yorkers talk. And I'm like, that's how I talk. I talk just like that. But I'm from a place in Orlando where they want me to talk like this. And if I don't talk like this, then I'm not feminine. If I don't talk like this, I'm not sweet. I'm not kind. And it's like the amount of effort it takes for me to talk like this. It also is just not who, it's just not who I am.
Right.
So, I really loved New York. And also, so at the time, the top three schools for theater were NYU, well, in order, Juilliard, SUNY Purchase, and NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at Dr. Phillips, and we were a theater school, and it was this legacy that people, you know, it was a big deal, and where's everybody going to school? Where's everybody going to school? And so I got into Purchase. I got a call back to Juilliard, but I got into Purchase, I got into NYU, I got into, like, the other schools that I auditioned for, DePaul and SMU, and going to Purchase was my dream. I mean, that was really, like, where I really, really, really wanted to go. And I talk about this in my new book, Body Waving Through the Bullshit, which is coming out in 2025, but I talk about just how, like, going to Purchase was like this culmination of like all the work that I'd been doing. Getting in here was it. And then I got there and I was like, ooh, I don't know about this. I don't know. Because ultimately, what we were doing in high school was actually low-key more advanced.
Wow.
Than what we were doing at Purchase. I mean, at Dr. Phillips, we doing 5 shows a year.
Right.
We're not just doing the Music Man and calling it a rap. So we were in a conservatory in high school. So when I got to Purchase, it was a wild time because one, also like I went through my growth spurt the summer before I went to Purchase.
Okay.
So I had been like this little loud little person, mm-hmm. like a well, small person, I should say, for a long time. And then it was like all of a sudden, like I had, you know, some height and some womanness about me, you know, and now I'm going to this school and I'm like, these are men. These are like full grown men. Like, these are not boys. These are men. And again, social cues and awkwardness, and I'm trying to figure it out. And I'm, you know, I'm in this city, but the first night that I was at Purchase, everybody would like gather on the mall and cyphers would start the first night every year. And I just remember watching people just stand in cyphers and rap. And I was like, oh my God, I am in the right place. Now, what it turned out to be was that I ended up getting kicked out of the conservatory.
Tell me why.
So part of the, I guess, the way that these schools retain their, like their status is by who they, by how many people they cut mm-hmm. every year. And so because of that, like there's certain people that would do things to try to avoid from getting cut. And so one of the guys in my class felt like he was going to get cut. So he decided to try to sacrifice me so that he wouldn't get cut. So he created a story and he told the teacher a lie. He told her that I was listening to my headphones in class, which I was not, but she was already a baddie lady anyway. And again, I'm the only black girl in my class. So like, you're just a very easy target. And I've been writing about this. So I've been talking to my classmates and just, we just thinking back on like the type of shit that used to get said. And, she just lost it. I mean, she lost it. She was like, I can't believe this. I can't believe you would be here listening to your headphones. You have the attention span of a 3-year-old. You are never going to make it. Mind you, I've already been on shows. But
can she see you in the class? Like, I mean, you could just look. I mean, what would you have 100 students in your class? She could have just looked out and like, well,
no, I had 20.
Well, damn, it ain't that hard to see who has those headphones or who. I mean, they were big back then. They don't have the little pause that you and I
so
have now.
So what would you deduce? Why would she just flip out?
I that would lead me to speculation, conjecture, and innuendo. So you were there. I mean, had you had any run-ins with this teacher prior to this? Nope. So you were a model student in class?
Straight A's.
Straight A's.
Every class, straight A's.
And that one incident possibly led to you...
So then she goes on a mission to get me kicked out of the conservatory. And you can, I mean, you can look at the transcript and it's just like, so all of her reviews up until this point, stellar, stellar, amazing, amazing, amazing. And then all of a sudden, there's no excuse. I don't know. I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. I don't know. But she definitely went the distance and she got me kicked out. And I appealed. The two heads of the conservatory at the time were two brothers, Dean Irby and the late Israel Hicks. And I appealed and I asked everyone in my class if they would be willing to write a letter in my defense. Even the motherfucker who lied wrote a letter in my defense because now he felt bad. Mm-hmm. And the head of the appeals process said, we can't take the word of 25 students over a tenured professor. So what we're going to do is we will reduce your sentence from an expulsion to a suspension. So you can take a year off and then come back.
What?
So because this is a conservatory within a liberal arts school, you have like what's called your core classes that mm-hmm. you got to take, you know?
Right.
So basically, I was allowed to go take my core classes and then come back to the conservatory the next year. Mm-hmm. But during that year where I was taking my core classes, I realized I didn't want to go back to their dusty ass conservatory. They could keep that. And so then I was like, I'm going to drop out of school. I'm going to quit school. I don't want to be here. I'm going to drop out of school. Because like everyone was just majoring in shit that I just had no interest in. People majoring in like, you know, psychology or sociology. And I worked at the Gap and all of my bosses had all these degrees. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you telling me about how to fold jeans, but you got a sociology degree. Clearly that shit ain't working for you.
Right.
So I'm like, and also this is going to cost me a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I just can't see myself spending all this damn money to get a degree just to say I got a degree.
Right.
Now my mom is losing it. You know, everybody's just like, oh my God, what's going to happen to Amanda?
So you called your mom and told her that you had what transpired? Or did you hold
her? Yeah. Oh. No. I can't hold water. Yeah, I can't hold water. I can hold other people's secrets, not my own. I told her everything.
How did she take it?
I mean, she was livid because she knows it's not factual. Like if one thing about Amanda, she going to give you a red lip, a wing liner and straight A's.
Right.
Okay. One thing I'm good at is school, baby.
Right.
I do school. So for me to get kicked out of school, fuck out of here. Also, I'm a brilliant actress. So there's also like no version of this that's related to my skills. Right. Like I didn't get here by accident. This is the number two conservatory in the nation. I am one of only 20 students and I won like national scholarships. I won the arts scholarship, the NFAA arts scholarship. I won the Donna Reed scholarship. They're picking two students out of 1,500 auditionees. Like, so I'm proof positive here.
Right.
So there's nothing legitimate. And, you know, for all it's worth, y'all, like, I'm saying y'all to the people, but like, I am very self-aware about like, okay, I could have done that better, you know, but in this situation, it's like, no, I really showed up. So, but nonetheless, my mom was panicking because, you know, that meant like I'm coming into the real world. Like, so what is this going to be? Like, I'm going to quit school and be a waitress and
right.
try and make it in New York City. Like her just trying to imagine that was just like, oh, my God. And then I had a professor who was like, you know, you're too smart to quit school. We're going to figure this out. And I told her, like, I'm not going to stay here on some bullshit. And she found out that I could create my own major. And so in order to create your major, you had to connect two schools of study. So there's like the School of Natural Sciences, the School of Social Sciences, the School of Theater, Arts, and Film. And so I had already had 32 credits from my freshman year in acting.
Mm-hmm.
But all I cared about was learning about Black history because I had never been taught it.
Okay.
Like, you know, I mean, you learn about
the basics. Yeah, base, yeah.
But within my core classes, I got to take Harlem Renaissance. I got to take, you know, African-American women writers. I got to take, you know, African-American History 101. And you just like, you feel like you have been...
You're doing a deep dive.
Yeah. But you feel like you've been betrayed.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So at that point, I was like, this is all I care about. This is all I'm interested in. And so I was able to create my own major because they didn't have Black Studies at my school. So I made up the major.
Right.
Black Studies with a concentration in the visual and performing arts. So I combined the School of Social Sciences with the School of Theater Arts and Film. That meant I had to go back to Dean Irby and have him sign off in order for me to get this major. And he was my advisor. So he's the one who watched me go from straight A's to then some random shit. And I'm looking at Dean like, what
you gonna do about this?
He's like, you know, I don't really know what to tell you. I'm like, God damn it, brother. But I came back to him with that piece of paper and I remember him looking at it and pausing. And I said, I need you to sign this because you tried to ruin my life.
You told a man that?
I need you to sign this. Yeah, when people tell you that you have to take a year off of school for no reason because they want to keep a quota for their little college. Yes, you tried to ruin my life. I need you to sign this.
So what did he say?
He signed that. And then I ended up graduating on time. And I was the commencement speaker. And I got to say what I needed to say. And you can watch the speech on YouTube.
You got a master's degree in African American studies with a concentration on hip hop from Columbia.
Yep.
What made you need an advanced degree?
Well, that's what I mentioned earlier. It was that I felt like I want to be a voice of liberation and I want to use my art to do it. And I know that in this nation, they need you to have certain, you know, for whatever reason, they need you to have certain credentials mm-hmm. to legitimize you. And I also knew that they would need it from a predominantly white institution. So yeah, Ivy League, even better. Even better. The other reason, though, was, again, like I knew that I'm an artist, but I also knew that I had a purpose here. I've always known that. I've always known that I have a purpose. Even if I don't know what the purpose is, I've always known that I have a purpose. Mm-hmm. And the hardest times in my life have been when I wasn't sure of what that purpose is. And, at that point in time, and I still have the essay, like I said, I need to come to Columbia. I need to get this advanced degree because I want to speak mm-hmm. for my people. I want to speak with my people. I want to speak like in the effort of my people. And I'm going to need as much information as possible to do so to the best of my abilities.
You have a concentration in hip hop.
Yeah.
Was it being in New York and seeing all this and the battles and the going on, you like, yeah, okay. So what made you do the concentration in hip hop?
So in order for Black culture to continue to thrive and grow, it has to also be protected. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that culture gets protected is it becomes academized. And, you know, we saw that happen with jazz. We saw jazz go from this like music of sex to an actual part of academia, mm-hmm. right? Hip hop as well was happening at that time. Like you see like Ninth Wonder teaching classes and Chuck D and KRS-One and Bun B. And so you started to see the academizing of hip hop as not just an art form, but as a culture that has more to it than just music, right? You got breaking, you got graffiti, you got DJing, you got style. You know, it becomes something that is now a part of Black history versus just like a thing that's being done. And so at the time, I was also working at Sirius Satellite Radio. And I would be in my studio and over there is Dane. Behind me is Grandmaster Flash. To the right of me is MC Light. Over there is Red Alert. I'm surrounded by the history.
Right.
So I'm like, well, this is an opportunity for me to put this on record and have archival study that is growing, you know, with these people. So what I would do is all of my papers, one third of them would include some interview with somebody within hip hop. So no matter what class I was in, whether it was within the African-American studies, whether it was in the African-American studies department or not, I would find a way to tie whatever the thesis was of that paper for the final paper, I would tie that thesis to hip hop in some way. And I would involve interview with, you know, anybody that made sense. So like my graduate thesis is, about how the hip hop album is a continuation of the African American narrative. And so in that paper, I do that first part where I just explain my thesis. The second part was a comparative analysis between Richard Wright's Native Son and Biggie's Ready to Die. And showing with the album and the lyrics of Ready to Die, how this is a novel on wax. And then the third section was interview about the importance of storytelling to hip hop. And in that interview, it was like everybody kept saying Nas, kept saying Nas, kept saying Nas. And then finally I was able to interview Nas. And so the third part of it is interview with, you know, a lot of people and finally Nas about the necessity for storytelling in hip hop. And that proved my thesis.
You know what? Since you're a hip hop scholar, okay, you see all the beefs going on. Are they good for hip hop?
Are they good for hip hop? I mean, it's a different kind of beefs than the one I grew up with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think anything is good for hip hop that elevates skill. I think anything is good for hip hop that brings attention to hip hop as an art form versus as a gossip thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like so much of what we hear about hip hop ain't even about the music.
Right.
You know, it's like this nigga and his baby mama. You know, and this nigga got arrested for this bullshit. You know, so when it's something that's really more focused on the music, I think that is good for hip hop. I think it's also interesting how it went, because I think what's also good for hip hop is just the maturation of hip hop. Mm-hmm. You know, and it is very mature for J. Cole to say, you know, I did this, but then it didn't feel right. Yeah. So I'm stopping.
It is. But here's the thing. I grew up, the first beef that I could beef or diss was Kool Moe Dee and LL.
Okay.
And then, you know, obviously you came on, you had Ice Cube with NWA, No Vaseline. You had Biggie and Tupac. I mean, you know, Biggie and Tupac hit. I hit.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. eBay Motors is here for the ride. You know what I remember about my first car? Is that the moment I got it, I wanted to improve it. Because like most 16-year-old kids, you don't exactly get a luxury automobile. So you look at it, you go, well, I need to add some speakers. I need to tint out the windows. I need to make this thing the coolest car possible so I can cruise around town with all my buddies, waving at the babes, and enjoy myself. So my favorite part of car culture when I was young was definitely the subwoofers in the back of the car. And we built the boxes from scratch, had multiple 12-inch subs, and you could hear me coming from a long, long way away. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hit them up, and then you have Jay-Z and Nas. That's still the hardest one, right? Hit them up is the hardest one, right?
Swap.
Ah, come on. We're gonna have to edit this out. We're gonna have to edit this. That's the hardest one. No Vaseline.
Where's the motherfucking bitch in the clique you claim West Side? She's not coming quick with game. You claim to be a nigga. I'm gonna fuck your wife.
Hey, whoa.
For life. What?
Whoa. But so it's normally a one-on-one. What we see now with the, okay, we see Ross coming at Drake. We see Kendrick Lamar. We see this. Mm-hmm. We see Future and Metro. It seemed like they all was like, Drake is Thanos and everybody coming at him. Did I miss something?
That's a different, I hadn't seen it like that, but that's not too far off. But you know, why not, you know? Things changes. We need different shit. So, okay. I mean, when Hov came, remember, Hov didn't just come at Nas. Mm-hmm. He came at Mobb Deep as well. Rest in peace to P.
Yeah.
He put a lot of, he was on that screen.
Yeah.
That Summer Jam screen.
Pop came at Mobb Deep also.
I know. Being there.
So what's up with the women beef? You okay with the women beefing?
Beef is a part of hip hop.
Okay.
I just want it to stay on the wax. You know, that's really the goal, is that for it to stay on wax. But it challenges you. It forces you to get your lyrics up. And that's what, I just want to see people rap.
Right.
I want to see people like rap well. That's really it. Like to me, and I know people going to fight me for this, but y'all already want to fight me anyway. I feel like Nas won the Jay-Z beef because Jay-Z's skill, in my opinion, diminished on that last rap when he's talking about I left a condom on your
baby
on,
seat.
Yeah, I was like, now see that's not
but,
even.
But see, but I gotta hit you. I gotta hit you low. To. No, I gotta hit you low. You don't talk to all. Nah, you ain't finna get me.
You I'm gonna go
low.
This.
I'm going low.
But he started it.
I keep telling you, you gonna get the best of me. When they go high, I go low.
I'm not saying that you can't go low, but I just felt like his rhyme quality. Like normally,
yeah.
Hov would have done that in a very metaphorical, clever way.
But that's the old. I mean, now I don't. Hov is above that. Now he wouldn't even dignify any response. Somebody
I'm
taking
talking about then.
Yeah, but I you got. I got to get you.
You think Hov won that beef? That's what honestly, I'm talking about.
No.
But what I'm talking about.
But it's just like when Pac said. He said, "I hit your wife. My wife was off limits."
Shannon, I'm not talking about. What they said. I'm talking about how they said it.
Yeah.
Like Pac delivered that shit in the way Pac delivers shit.
Yeah.
He didn't change up. The Hov I know, the Hov who says things like, can't stop I from drinking my ties with tie down in Nevada, ha ha, pa pa, word life.
Yeah.
That seemed like a diminishment of his skill set. That's all I'm saying. A toast.
You shouldn't have to worry when you buy tickets to your next big event. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all your sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and the best price guaranteed, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. Game Time is the only ticket app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. See the view from your seat before you buy so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. All-in prices show you the total up front so you know exactly what you're getting a great deal before you check out. Buy tickets in 2 seconds with two taps. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code Shay for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an app, redeem the code Shay for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. You're a poet, and this you were in a group called Floetry, right? Is that mm-hmm. And you replaced one of the founding members, Natalie?
Yeah, Natalie. Mm-hmm.
And read a lot that you weren't well received. Do you know?
Who?
I mean, if they're turning their back, they're booing. I mean, I guess the people that you're trying to read the poetry to.
Incorrect.
Okay. Correct me.
I will write about this extensively. I was asked to join Flowetry after Natalie. I was told that Natalie left. Okay. Apparently, that was not the case.
Okay.
But that's what I was told.
Okay.
And then we prepared to go on tour.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not tell the fans that Natalie would not be joining Marsha on the tour.
Okay.
So when I come on stage, I do not resemble Natalie in any shape, way, or form. Right?
Right.
So immediately, our first show in Boston, people are like, well, who the fuck is this bitch? But I can sing, and I know the songs. So the first show, great time. Good job. But now the word is out. Natalie ain't on the tour.
Right.
It's Amanda, whoever this broad is. It's Amanda Seals. Well, actually, no, I had a name by then because I had done MTV.
Right.
So we now went from Boston. The next show that we were doing was somewhere else. I can't remember, but maybe Philly.
Okay.
And so I guess to just correct the scenario, it's not that people were mad at me because of how I was delivering the work. It was that they felt duped by the ticket sales because they had bought tickets to see the Flowetry they knew, and they were protesting that this was not the Flowetry they knew. Nonetheless, every time I won them over. Because I am talented.
Okay.
So every time I won them over, and I remember, you know, being at Club Love in D.C., and they had their backs turned to the stage, and it was like I had to, it was like I was on The Voice. You know, I had to get them to turn them, to spin them chairs around. Right. But I sang my song.
That really happened. So they really...
My nigga, yes. What are you talking about? Yes. Do you mind if I call you my nigga?
You call me whatever you like. I mean, that's
yes,
a far, that's
a far improvement. I'm talking about literally like, and then I'm over here, all you gotta do is say yes. And they like, you deny what you feel, let me undress you, baby. Maybe this little skinny light-skinned bitch got something with her. Yeah, that really happened. But I wasn't doing poetry, I was singing.
Okay, so, okay, you win them all, like, okay, they like me, yeah, they so, like Amanda, okay.
Yeah, but Marsha never made it any easier.
Why?
Why?
Yes, why? Why did, okay, Natalie
I
go.
I think, this is now, see what I'm saying? I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, this is your point of view? This is your POV?
I think that they wanted me to quit.
Why?
Because then she could proceed on the tour by herself, and she was in the process of going into her solo career. And the way that I was treated was so just shitty that I think they were really trying to force me to quit, and they almost did. They almost got me out of that.
And you said?
Honestly, it wasn't even me who said it. It was our drummer at the time, Daryl. And me and Daryl didn't even rock with each other, but he spoke into me, and he was like, because I was really like, these people, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. This because every show, we would come on the stage, and she would not even say my name. And every night, she would say to me, okay, so this is how we're going to start the show tonight. So I never got a rhythm. Can you imagine you on the football field, mm-hmm. and every night, the quarterback coming with a play you ain't never ran before? You ain't never seen this shit? He like, all right, we're going to do a 52 banana split with a cherry on top. You like, nigga, we ain't never done that before. I thought we was doing the banana parfait.
Right.
So that's what every single night. And it would get more and more egregious. I just never forget. We was in North Carolina, and she was like, all right, so how we're going to do this is I'm going to come on stage. I'm going to start singing Butterflies. And then you're going to come on stage, but you're going to like dap up the musicians. But I'm already going to be singing. You're going to dap up the musicians. And you're going to come on stage after you dap up the musicians. You'll just like start singing, and then we'll just do the show. And I was like, so at no point you're going to say like, this is Amanda Seals. And she was like, I just don't want to disrupt the audience. Now, if I'm being generous, maybe she was just trying to mitigate the... I don't know. Maybe she was just trying to mitigate the nastiness from the audience. But like, if that was the case, she wasn't communicating that to me. So right. I felt very, 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 very isolated in the situation. And like, nobody was communicating this to me.
So at no point in time after Natalie left the group, okay, you do the first show in Boston and then you go to Philly or you go to Baltimore, wherever. Did she say, Natalie is no longer in the group.
No.
We have a lovely other lady named Amanda.
No.
And she's unbelievable.
No. And we didn't do press. And I remember Wendy Williams. So we get to Atlanta.
Okay.
Now, What people didn't know was that even before any of this had started, I was music director. So,
oh God, come on.
You ain't, months before.
You ain't supposed to do that.
I didn't even know he was the music director. I was already this nigga before.
But then once you find out, you're like, I can't do this.
Well, no, my point is that I had an insider.
Oh, okay, 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 okay. So you had some good intel, okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so you know, he gonna tell you everything.
All you gotta do is say yes. Can't deny what you feel. Let me undress you, baby.
So he's telling you.
So we're in Atlanta, and I had a solo song that I would sing. That was one of my songs. So we're in Atlanta, and after rehearsal, he pulls my coat. He's like, "Hey, she trying to cut your song," but she didn't tell me this. He's like, "She literally cut your song from the set list."
Yeah.
Which would mean that we would be in the middle of the show, right, and I would realize that my song is not happening.
And you're going to be out there like, damn, what my song?
So,
uh-oh.
I said, for sure, for sure, for sure. Okay. But now we got to get in the car together, me and Marsha. We got to get in the car together to go back to the hotel.
Ooh.
On the way to the car, my boy Dwight Willacy texts me and says, "Hey, you listen to Wendy Williams?" Also, like, why am I just casually listening to William Williams? But he's like, "Turn on Wendy Williams." Natalie is on Wendy Williams talking about the real flower tree. I don't know who Viv Amanda is. I'm not sure how she got involved, but I am the real flower tree. Oi, I'm the real flower tree. I'm working on my accent. I'm the real flower tree. And so if you're going to these shows, just know you're not supporting the real flower tree. We're sitting in the car. And I just found out you're trying to cut my song. And I said, "Did you try to cut my song from the show?" "I don't know what you're talking about." I said, "I was told that you're trying to cut my song from the show." She's like,
"Who told you that?"
She actually didn't ask. To my recollection, she didn't ask. But nonetheless, it was just like, "I want my song in the show."
Mm-mm.
And so she's like, "All right, whatever." But now I'm seeing from Dwight that like Natalie is on Wendy Williams talking crazy. So I run up to the room. And so now I'm like, "Yo, apparently Natalie's on Wendy Williams." So now we turn the shit on in the car. We sitting in the car. Listen to this. She ain't saying nothing. We get to the hotel. I go to the room. I'm still listening. Natalie is burning me up. She's like, "Amanda Seals is not real. She's fake. This is all fake, 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 fake." So now Marsha calls me. Like, "Did you listen?" I said, "Yeah, what you gonna do about it?" "Nothing." I said, "Oh, okay." And this is a trend of me not being protected.
Right.
Okay.
Did you actually think she was gonna protect you, considering that she had never given you the proper recognition, the proper identification? She'd never given you the proper...
I shouldn't have, but I did.
Okay.
I shouldn't have, but I did. Because I always expect... And this is also a flaw, but I always hope for the best in people, because Shannon.
You hope in people what you do yourself. We talked about this earlier. We got to stop that.
I know, but it feels so defeated to do it. But it's true. But it feels like you're giving into. It just feels like you're giving into the worst parts of existence to do it. That's what it feels like. It feels very nihilistic to just really give in, but it is the only way that you can really protect yourself. Mm-hmm. And my co-host Supreme on my radio show, always, he'd be like, "Amanda, most people are full of shit. If you would just accept this, yeah, you would have such less heartache." And I'm like, "I know, but
I just
want them to not be." So now, okay, so now she didn't do nothing.
Yeah, well, she didn't do anything. You feeling some type of way too now. I can see it. I see it right now.
Well, what most people think is feeling some type of way for me is actually just me being hurt. It just reads, because of the type of human I am and the way that my self is set up, it reads as anger, but it really is deep hurt. That's what you're reading. And I am betrayal. And I'm giving so much of myself to this. And to your point, ain't shit been right up to this point. So it is a straw on a camel. Ah, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay. Man, I'm out. Now, I call the music director, like, yo, this shit just got ridiculous. He's like, yo, I'm about to come to your room. Let's talk. I'm like, okay. This nigga never comes to the room. I come downstairs. He's talking to a white chick at the bar. I'm like, God!
The one that you used to... I thought he came up there just for one last soiree. That's what I was thinking.
Because that would have made sense.
Yeah, for sure.
The pain away. You know? But no. So I then called my homegirl to take me to the airport. Okay? So I call my mom and I'm like, book me a ticket. I'm out of here. I'm out of here because I've reached my wit's end. And again, I have no allies here. Yeah. I had a manager who was none of the above. Okay? This nigga sent me on the road with no contract. Talking about, well, you should just be happy they asked you.
What?
So I want you to follow the themes. In this interview, I want you to follow two themes, misunderstood and not protected. I want you to follow those themes, okay? Because you've noticed it's themes. You follow the theme of racism, but I want you to follow those other themes because they're important. They're important to understanding someone like me. And when you have not been protected and you are misunderstood, what are you going to naturally develop? Defense mechanisms.
For sure. You
hard.
Because
you have to protect yourself.
Yes.
There's no other way.
No.
They will tear you up.
Mm-hmm.
They will eat you alive.
Right.
And if you're creating these things also within the context of autism, within the context of already speaking a certain way, thinking a certain way, you are setting yourself up for a very hard road. But you're not even the one setting yourself up. I take that back. You are set up for a hard road. In the midst of all of this, though, you are brilliant. You have talent. And you are in a field that's the only way that those things really work in. You know, it's not like I can go be the theatrical SEALs, like at the hospital. You feel me? Like, this is where I have to be. So I was about to leave. And the drummer who we used to clash because we both had these like really big personalities that we hadn't matured into yet, you know? He hit me and he said, you can't leave. You cannot leave because if you leave, they'll win. And they want you to leave. And you cannot let them win. And he said, because later in life, you will look back on this and you will say, I stayed and I was strong and it's going to matter. It's going to matter. And he was right. And so that night, I ended up saying, I came back. And we had a show that night. And we had a conversation before the show. And, you know, the 48 Laws of Power, it can be used in a very duplicitous fashion, but sometimes it is useful when you're dealing with folks that just can't see you because of their own blind spots. And I'm a very, very emotionally intelligent person. And so a lot of times I end up having to do the emotional labor for other people to get us through.
Right.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting.
Can I ask you this? In your life, how many people do you feel that have protected you and understood you?
Like, you want a number?
Yeah. Because you say it on one hand.
Now, I mean, at this point, I've amassed an incredible amount, and it's been a beautiful evolution.
Okay.
But up until that, youth,
yeah.
In my youth, I mean, my mom.
That was your rock.
And, you know, it's like, it's just, there's different processes, right? Like, I will say, like, my gymnastics coach.
You speak very high. You know what? You speak very highly of your gymnastics coach. And there are a couple of teachers at John Phillips High School.
Dr. Phillips
High School that you speak in glowing terms about. And then when you speak of them, you radiate. You don't radiate when you mention anybody else's name. But when you mention those people's names, your mother, your gymnastics coach, the people at the instructors at Dr. Phillips High School, you radiate. What was it about them that caused them to not only understand Amanda, but was willing to protect Amanda? Your mom, I get. That's your mom. She's supposed to.
Because they saw what some people consider as flaws, they saw as strengths. You know, I remember when I started going to therapy because I was like, you know, people keep telling me that no one likes me. And I do not understand.
Did you believe it?
That no one likes me?
Yeah.
Yeah. because I had low self-esteem.
Okay.
So I'm just like, I don't understand. And I remember her asking me, well, what are the reasons why people say they don't like you? And I told her, I said, my tone, they feel that I'm, like too detail oriented, like it's annoying. you know, they tell me like me being detail oriented, they take it as nitpicky.
Right.
That I am too demanding. Whereas like for me, it's like, well, no, it's like, it's more so just me holding you accountable. They say that I am mean, but in my version of it, it's like, well, no, I'm just being honest. And so we started working on me being better at understanding like the neurotypical, like the normal way that things are read, mm-hmm. so that I could better protect myself.
Right.
Like that may be the truth, but you don't got to tell it right now. You know it and good for you.
Right.
Hold that.
Right.
Hold that. You don't got to tell it right, right. now. It may have been a yes or no question, but people need extra words. I lost the job because I was answering in yes or no questions.
How you lose a job if you answer yes or no? Because you added.
Because they were emailing me.
Yeah.
Asking me yes or no questions.
Okay.
And my responses were yes.
Yes.
And
no.
And then finally I got an email that said, you know what? We decided to go with somebody else because by your responses, it seems like you're not interested.
Well, you say answer yes or no.
So now you understand me. It took us a little bit, but you hear. So
they wanted you to say, yes, I would love to have the job because I think this is an amazing opportunity for me. And I just love this company. I thank you.
Get out there and dance, nigga.
But Amanda.
And black people do it to each other.
Amanda, we had the conversation up earlier. And what did we say? If you understand the rules.
No, but I didn't understand the rules. I'm just talking then. I didn't understand the rules. So I was saying that.
The therapy helped you.
Yes. But even still, it's like understanding the rules and like, you know, then you are who you are. Like that ends up being in conflict with each other so often. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like you understand the rules, but you're like, in order for me to like play this game, I got to like do a whole renovation of self. That's not going to be an upgrade. It's just me really just trying to mask to become palatable to you.
But don't you think realistically there are a lot more people that dress in Halloween costumes year round as opposed to just on that day?
I do not want to be those people. And those are not the people that change the world. And that's what I'm here to do. And I literally went and got my master's because Rich Bova on the campus of Purchase College stopped me and held my hand because he was a psychic. And he would always do readings for people. And he just held my hand and was like, well, you got to go get your master's. And I was like, God, I thought I was done with this. And he was like, no, you got to go get your master's because you're going to change the world and you're going to need it to do it.
You believe in psychics?
I believe in a lot.
Oh, my goodness.
How can you not believe in psychics Mm-mm. and believe in God?
No, you're no psychic.
What do you, wait, let's take
a moment.
Let's take a moment.
Yes.
If you believe in God, mm-hmm. then you believe in a spiritual power that is greater than all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You also believe that there are people who are able to access that in ways that others cannot. Do you not? That's what our pastors do. That's what people who are Catholics believe priests are doing. Mm. And for all intents and purposes, when we pray, we are attempting to contact that power. We are attempting to just let me finish. We are attempting to tap in to that power, to tap into that energy and bring it to us
okay.
as we are continuing to bring it to them. Mm-hmm. Now, when we vilify the idea of psychics or witches, et cetera, a lot of times what's mixed into that is shit that ain't got nothing to do with actual connection to spirit.
Okay.
There are people who are operating in dark spaces yeah. and dark places, but there are people who are tapped in that just have different names.
Yeah, okay.
And so the idea of a psychic, like I'm not calling him a psychic.
A medium
or somebody who is literally just more connected. I am very connected to like, I'm empathic. I can feel. I'm very connected to just nature, to the vibration of things, because I want to be, but also because I'm an artist, right? Like, I can make something from nothing. Like, there's something that is really unique in that ability to do so. So when I'm talking about someone who is able to read you, it's not like it's not that they're dealing with dark magic. It's that they are able to see. They're prophets. So it's just language. But as long as it's done in love, it's all coming from the same place. Well,
pastors seem to have been accessing people's bank accounts a lot lately.
That is very true. And that is why we have to always be careful about who is at the pulpit. So,
one of your first jobs in New York was a radio host. How'd you get into, you know what?
I feel like I didn't finish that previous story.
Go ahead, tell it for you. Tell it.
Oh, Floetry.
Yes.
Let me finish it.
Okay, tell it. Because I thought you was done with
I just feel like it's important to note that with the 48 Laws of Power, I realized in that moment, I have to let her win the battle to win the war.
Okay.
And my ego has to be removed in order to do that. And that's something I had to learn in that moment. Like, ego is not serving you here. And I really don't have an ego in that way.
Right.
Like, I can really often see, like, there's a bigger picture here. And so I had to let her know that I was not a threat to her. And I realized that for some reason she was like treating me that way.
Right.
I don't know if that was her.
So you actually had a conversation with her.
Yeah, right before the show. And I had to tell her, like, I just want you to like me. I just want you to feel safe with me here. I just want you to see me as someone who is not trying to step on your toes, because that's what it feels like. And if that's not what it is, so be it. But if that's what it is, I just want you to know that that's not what I'm trying to do. So I had to make myself small so that she could not feel like I was trying to take her place. And after that,
Amanda,
we had no problems.
I don't know that, Amanda.
You don't know much, Amanda, yet.
I mean, the Amanda that made herself shrink down, I mean, it went down to, honey, I shrunk the kid.
Baby, I know what to do. That's the part that people don't understand, is that it's not even that you necessarily are shrinking. It's that you understand. It's like if you're on a field and you know that in this play, I'm not the star.
Yes.
In this play, all I need to do is block this so that this ball can get to this point.
Yes.
That's the point. And I am that person. I know what role I'm playing on the field.
Yes. You can be good at any game.
Yes.
If you understand the rules.
There you go.
From an hour ago. And
don't talk to me like that.
Dab it up.
No.
Can I call you my sister?
Time out.
Can I call you my sister? Dab it up.
No.
Come on.
No.
You agree with me.
Because what you're saying is not accurate to the situation.
Yes, it is.
No, because the game, we're talking about two different games.
No. In that moment, you realize
I'm not arguing that point. I'm not arguing that point. You were saying that it's easier if you understand the game. And all I was saying was that I don't know that it's easier, but it definitely is important. Because it wasn't necessarily easy, let me tell you.
Okay,
but it was necessary. And I did it. And if I'm being honest, I don't know that I would call it the game as much as I would call. I mean, I use that as a metaphor, but it's like you could use that example in an operating room. Like, if you're the nurse, you're not with the scalpel, but you are important and you know your role in this situation. And that is fine. It's the lieutenant and the captain, right? Like, you just have to understand that. And when you do, your ego doesn't matter. Because your ego is not based on being at the top. Your ego is based on being useful.
Yes.
And that really is what I feel like a lot of people in this society are not realizing. We have this main character energy that a lot of people are just really built into. And it's like everybody needs to feel like they're the star. They're at the top. Their name is on the et cetera.
Yeah.
And there's so many other ways to be of value. And a lot of people are not cut for being the leader. They're not cut for being the star. And they in these positions and they don't know how to motherfucking act. And they're actually really being.
You stay on the tour. You work at
Marsha.
Marsha. Y'all hash out your you hash them out, or you just y'all make peace to get through the tour.
No, after that, it was fine because I let her know that I wasn't a threat to her. So then it's not a problem.
How would you? It was her show, right? So how?
Child, I can't, all I can do is my best.
So you did end up leaving the show?
No, I did the whole tour.
You did the whole tour?
I did the whole tour, and then after we were going to be a group called Floor Tree Remix. And so her manager kept playing around with my manager around it, and then she had me make a MySpace page for us. And then she didn't accept the friend request.
Oh, my.
Yep. And that was the end of it. And then I just did my own music. And I put out my album, Life Experience.
Have you talked to her since?
I actually saw her at Usher's show recently, and she went to hug me, and I was like, "Nah, I'm good."
Come on, you didn't do that. Come on, now don't be petty, LaBelle.
How was that petty?
Cause she really, after all them years.
Yeah, after all them years, what am I hugging her for? That's not my people's. First of all, I'm not a hugger in general, but that's not. Yeah, see, I'm not petty. I'm not phony. I'm not going to hug people that are not my people. If you treat me like shit in real life, don't try to hug me at a party.
Because
I won't hug you back. It's a song. If you treat me like shit in real life, don't try to hug me at a party. Because I won't hug you back.
That's not a song you made. But here's the thing. I can't believe you. I can't believe you would do that. That was.
I am who I am. People know who I am. And that's a beautiful thing. The person I am is beautiful because you don't never have to guess. People like me are a blessing. You don't ever have to guess. And so much of this life is people not wanting to deal with the real and just hiding in the shadows. And instead of honor is a strong word, but instead of, you know, regarding and respecting people who are straight ahead, we treat them like they are a nuisance. We treat them like they are a disruption, when really they are a gift, because it really removes the guesswork of subtext. It removes the guesswork of ulterior motives. I am what I am. What you see is what you get. Whatever you hear me saying is what I'm saying. And to me, that is such an easier route. You know, and I've found people in my life over time that really see that is such a dope way to exist. And it's been a blessing. So when you asked me earlier about like people who have protected me and like people who understand me, like it's those people who see that as a gift, not as an attack.
Have you ever hugged anybody that you didn't like or shook their hands?
I mean, I'm sure I did when I was less sure of myself, and when I felt like I needed to play the game. You know, I've had self-esteem and inferior to complex issues for a long time, and I've had to learn how to love myself as who I am and be okay with that, and also understand the repercussions of that.
Okay, it's okay. We move on now. We good with Marcia. This concludes the first half of my conversation. Part two is also posted, and you can access it to whichever podcast platform you just listened to part one on. Just simply go back to Club Shay Shay profile, and I'll see you there.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.